Well, hello everybody. It is Eddie, and we are glad you're with us today. And we have a variety of stuff to cover. And we have a special guest, and we will get to her in a minute and talk about some really important stuff that relates to not just our future, but a lot of our clients and understanding how it works. So, Mr. Matt, you with us?
I am here. How are you doing?
And Crystal and I really hate you're not in Dallas today. It's only like 94 and about 85% humidity. So just saying, man, you're missing something.
81 here, so I know you're jealous.
Yeah, well, the north of 80% humidity seems like it's an issue. And then Moore's with us.
Hola.
More, is it still snowing in Grand Rapids, or are you guys like, can you see the ground yet?
Well, I tell you what, everybody hold on to your seats, because it is currently north of 70 and going to 80 by the end of the week, so hold on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah?
More, you did something interesting last weekend. In fact, you missed the class because of it.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. About 30 seconds and tell everybody what you got to do.
All right. Well, last weekend was a great weekend. I was actually in downtown Chicago and spent the weekend out on the water watching the Louis Vuitton America's Cup trials, where the Americans were competing against five other international teams on the AC-47, which is basically the America's Cup boat, just cut down for training purposes. And got to be out there in the water, chase them around, take videos, et cetera, et cetera. Got the scratch around on them. A buddy of mine actually works for Oracle, so as much as I miss being in San Francisco, it was fun being in Chicago, chasing the boats around.
So you were in a chase boat, but you actually got to get on the real competition boat.
I got to touch it. Let's put it that way. They wouldn't let me drive it. I offered. You know, I'm like, guys, I got some free time. I got my stuff with me, but they got guys that are better sailors than me to do that.
Yeah. By the way, just so y'all know, Moore apparently got a polar bear suit because it was like 80 degrees and whatever, and then all of a sudden it went to 50 and 35-mile-an-hour winds on Sunday, and he said it was magnificent.
It was absolutely fabulous, because the boats on Sunday, it was the water temperature was 60, the air temperature was 52, and the boats were doing about 45 knots, which means you'd have to mash on the accelerator if you're in a car to catch them. Hmm. And nobody flipped over, which is good.
Wow, cool. All right, let's get into it. Miss Crystal Ruiz, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing today?
We're good. So Crystal, as most of you guys know, is with Quest. She runs the Dallas office for Quest. Two special things about Crystal, I would say. First of all, she has reached the designation of being a certified IRA specialist. Am I saying that right? Mm-hmm. And that's very hard to do. In fact, she's one of the youngest in the entire industry to pass that certification. And she also, her personal specialty in this space is IRA administration related to buying discounted notes, and she has closed a lot of transactions, probably in the last couple of years, has done as many note transactions as any person in the industry. So we ask her to be on today because we're getting some specific questions about the treatment of this. And so, Crystal, thank you for being on today, and I'm going to let you run with it here. So, Matt, why don't you kind of read off the questions, and then and I know Kevin Moore has some things that he hears from being out on the road with him, and we'll just kind of work through it.
All right, so the question came in from Kent, and he was wondering, I'll just read out the full question, and then you can cut it up as you choose fit. When you use your IRA to purchase a defaulted note, several transactions occur, from monthly servicing fees, foreclosure process, forced place insurance, and attorney fees, etc. So every time you do a transaction through your self-directed IRA, there is substantial fees. How do you reduce the number of transactions fees that you have to pay from your IRA, or can you?
Okay. Well, there's actually a couple different ways that you can do it. As far as the transactional fees to pay these bills, it's about $5 for a check. So for the monthly servicing fees, one option that you have is to just pay one bulk for the year if you choose to do it that way. That way you only have to cut one check. But the most common that I see is if you do have multiple bills for a certain property, what you can do is you could have one individual designated that's a non-disqualified person, so just not yourself, your spouse, or anyone closely related, like a lineal ascendant or descendant, actually have the right to hold the check for you and then cut the checks from there. So a lot of people will use like a servicer or a property manager to handle those fees so that you only have to cut one check for $5 and then they can handle the rest from there.
So,
and as long as we have the invoices, then you're good to go.
So, Crystal, one of the vendors that our students commonly use is National Asset Advisors over in South Carolina. And I know they have a kind of a boarding process where you deposit some money with them. They don't necessarily spend the money without your authority, but you can like give them $3,000 and that'll cover lawn mowing services and this and that and whatever into that case. So instead of cutting a lot of little bitty checks, that's one way you can do it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely the most common and the most cost effective that I see. And then otherwise, it's really just getting someone that you trust that you can give that same option to. So a lot of people use like a brother or sister to do that as well.
Okay. So Kevin Moore's not related to me. He could do it, but no, he really can't because he actually works for me, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so I'm
you
just
could
giving...
get an indirect benefit.
Matt can't do it from two perspectives. Matt's my son-in-law, number one, and number two, he's an employee, right? So I'm just kind of give you guys examples of like somebody that I could do it with and I couldn't do it with. Crystal, you know that I have a long history with Dr. David Phelps, right? He's not an employee. He's a trusted friend. I could put the money with David Phelps and him hold it and him pay the invoices, correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, cool. Okay, so... Is that kind of cover the basis and more? I know you wanted to dive in with some more stuff that you commonly hear out being on the road.
Yeah, and I do have, Crystal, just one other add-on question to this. So let's just say, for example, Eddie cuts a check to David Phelps, say, for $1,500, and then the whole transaction only ends up costing, say, $1,000. Is there any issue sending that $500 back to you guys? I mean,
no, that's not a problem at all.
Okay.
You can go back into, as long as we have the invoice showing what it was going to cover, then that's completely fine.
Okay. And then I've heard some people say that they've been told that it's okay to use non-IRA money, non-SIDRA money to pay fees, and then they can be reimbursed back through their IRA. Is that correct or incorrect?
That's actually incorrect. Anything that you purchase within your IRA, you personally cannot get reimbursed if you use your personal funds. Reason being is that you're actually a disqualified person to your IRA, so you can never buy, sell, trade, provide goods, or extend services to, or get a benefit from your IRA. So if you were actually covering any fees in regards to the asset that your IRA holds, that could be a disqualified transaction. So you don't want to do that. Any fees that are going to be paid for an asset that involves the IRA should come directly out of the IRA. And for any reason that it can't be covered by the IRA, you would want to get a non-disqualified person to handle that fee, and then you can reimburse them. But it can't be anybody closely related to you that's a disqualified person.
So okay. Back to my analogy, if David Phelps fronted the money to pay a bill, he could legally be reimbursed for it.
That's correct. But if your spouse paid the bill, then she wouldn't be able to be reimbursed. It would have to be someone non-disqualified.
Right. So I know you're going to talk about prohibited transactions, but I gave you two analogies. Matt is by two ways prohibited from me exchanging money with him. First of all, he's my son-in-law, and second of all, he works for the company. Kevin Moore here with us, he can't do it because he is an employee of the company, right? He works with Note School and is compensated by Note School, right? In other words, you can't do something for Quincy's IRA for the same reason, right?
That's correct, Yeah, it's not directly disqualified, but it's gray area enough that you definitely want to stay away from it.
Okay. All right. All right, Kevin, what else?
Okay. So, Crystal, one of the things that I thought would be very, very helpful, because we do get a lot of questions out on the road regarding this, people are still a little confused on exactly how to set up a transaction in terms of if they're going to do a non-performing note deal, and let's just say they have enough money in their SIDRA to go ahead and buy the note, but they know they're going to need additional funds. We get a lot of questions on who they're actually allowed to partner with. So could we kind of go ahead and just do a little kind of a short role play, just like Eddie did, where we said, okay, here's Eddie Speed, here's Matt Edwards, here's Kevin Moore, here is David Phelps, where I go and say, okay, Crystal, here's what I'm looking at. I have $15,000 in my IRA. I want to go ahead and buy a non-performing note, and I know that I don't have enough money to buy the note and then take it through the process to foreclose on it. So could I go to someone who has another self-directed retirement account and partner up with them? And if I could, what would they have to look like? In other words, the whole lineal chain we talk about. And then if I can't, am I forced to having to go to someone who basically has no IRA money, no SIDRA money, and they're just going to make me a loan? Can you kind of just walk through that real quick?
Well, there's actually a couple of things to touch on with that question. One, about partnering, you can actually partner with any one of those disqualified people that we mentioned. So no one's really disqualified in regards to partnering. It just depends on how you structure that deal. So if you partner with a disqualified person, which again is yourself, your spouse, lineal ascendants or descendants, so anywhere that wealth passes, their spouses, and then any companies that those people own, control, manage, or are highly compensated by, if you partner with those individuals or entities, you have to stay within the percentages from the lifetime of that deal. So if you partnered 50-50 ownership, any fees as far as foreclosure fees would be 50-50, and then the profit would have to come back 50-50. If you partnered with someone who's non-disqualified, you could structure that deal however you choose.
Okay.
So there's really not a limit on who you can partner with. It really just depends on how you structure the deal.
Okay. So if I went to Eddie and said, Eddie, I want to go ahead and buy this non-performing note for $10,000, and I know it's going to take another $10,000 to work the deal out, would you go in with me 50-50? We could do that deal.
You could.
Okay.
Even though, Kevin, you're highly compensated by note school.
Correct.
Right. I mean, you. I can't buy an asset from you in my retirement account, and because you're not my father, you're not my spouse, you're not my children, but you are, from a corporate perspective, highly compensated by note school. Right.
Yes. And Crystal.
Matt can't do that for two reasons.
Right.
Matt can't sell me a property into my retirement account for two reasons. First of all, he's highly compensated in his day job as being an employee of Colonial Funding, but he also is my son-in-law, right? So there's two disqualifications that Matt falls under for that reason. Crystal could sell me an asset. I do business with them, but she's not under the disqualified relationship, right, Crystal?
That's correct, yeah. But as the great thing about the partnering, though, with the percentage from the beginning, is that you're just partnering. So it could still be anybody that's highly compensated with your company, because as long as you stay with the percentages from the buy, any bills on the property, any fees, and then also the profit, you're just partnering. You're not buying, you're not selling, you're not trading, you're not providing a service. So you're still following the rules there. So that's the one option that gets overlooked often.
Yeah, you're co-investing, essentially, Crystal?
Yeah, you can co-invest. Just as two separate investors, and then as long as you stay within those percentages, it's completely fine.
Right. So Martha's IRA and Eddie's IRA could go buy a property together, no problem. We just can't sell one to each other.
That's correct. So if you ever do any deals like that, you always want to take into account that it's the lifetime of that deal that those percentages are going to be set. So you can never sell any of your portions to each other. It's strictly whatever percentage you set from the initiation of that deal.
Okay. Brian LaGree asked a good question, and that is there any uniqueness about if I'm – let's go back to the analogy of I'm buying a deal and I know I'm going to have additional expenses, okay? So in the analogy, let's just say that I'm going to write a check to National Asset Advisors, okay? And they're going to be my servicer, and they're going to do property management and administration of a defaulted loan, okay? Is there any uniqueness in how we write the check out other than you guys are going to make the check out to National Asset Advisors?
No, not necessarily. We just need an invoice from them with a general amount of how much we need to send to them, and we can cut that in 24 to 48 hours. So it's pretty straightforward. We see it pretty often.
Yeah. Okay. Zarina, I know you're on.
Hey, Eddie.
Got Miss Crystal here with us, and she is covering some things related to self-directed retirement accounts, and I think you had something that a student recently asked you about.
Yeah, so a student that I was recently talking to said that currently in her IRA, she has checkbook control, and she wanted to know, and I don't know, but she wanted to know how would that fit in, you know, purchasing notes and things like that? Can she use it for that? Is there any kind of parameters that she has with using a checkbook?
Well, there is a couple of things that I do want to touch on with the checkbook control IRA. At Quest, we actually don't hold checkbook IRAs for a couple different reasons. One, because you are a disqualified person to your IRA, you do have to follow those transaction rules. So in our eyes, we're a little bit more conservative. If you guys know Quincy Long, we're definitely a little bit more conservative than other custodians. So we believe that a checkbook control IRA is actually a very dangerous account. So it's definitely something to research. There are a lot of companies that are creating these checkbook control IRAs for clients, having them sign a disclaimer, charging them quite a bit of money, and then handing it off. But there's a lot of dangers that come with the checkbook control IRA, especially because there's been a recent court case where it's come under fire. So that the checkbook control IRA itself was a prohibited transaction because he had checkbook writing ability. So I would definitely encourage her to research that a little bit and do some due diligence. Reason being because it could be deemed a prohibited transaction.
That's very interesting, Crystal. That's the first court case I know of that has said that that's a prohibited transaction.
Yeah, it's
I know Walter and Quincy and I have discussed this in audiences many times, and they've always said, well, it's not prohibited, but it's just not recommended. But now with this court case, that kind of changes everything.
Yeah, and I can send some information if anybody's interested in it. It's called Commissioner versus Ellis. In the court case itself, he was paying himself wages, but if you dig deep enough, you'll see that they actually stated that the IRA itself was a prohibited, it was a disqualified entity because he had direct checkbook control. So it's definitely coming under fire. So we are a little bit more conservative at Quest, mostly just for the safety of our clients and for Quest itself. So.
Yeah, so a big part of kind of the note school position has been highly influenced by the founder of Crystal's company, Quincy Long. And so we have always told students, you know, we are not training anybody to do checkbook-controlled IRAs, okay? And I know all the people that promote them. I see it all the time. And, you know, you're going to have – you don't need some IRA administration company. You're going to have your own deal, and you're going to control your own retirement account and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is it is not something that we've ever recommended that you do. That is totally different than having a personal property trust that is a third party, disinterested third party as a trustee. So checkbook control, when we what we say that means is that if Crystal's IRA account, she can write her own check. And that's what we refer to as checkbook control. And we're just probably not ever going to change our position. You know, you do not need to have a checkbook control. And I know you can say, well, some attorney told me it was okay. Well, I would say about that. I have a bad feeling that if you get audited one day and get smeared, he's not going to write a check and make it right.
Yeah, we definitely can't give any tax legal or investment advice, but I would definitely encourage to research it and do due diligence on the checkbook control IRAs. They're sold quite frequently, but they're pretty dangerous. So.
Yeah. All right, I'm trying to make sure we covered everything here.
The one question, Crystal, is when we were talking about partnering, where if Eddie and I partnered and we both went in, as 50-50 partners on a deal, there would be no taxation issues. There would be no UBIT issues, correct, on a transaction like that, because I'm putting in my money, he's putting in his money, and we're not lending it to each other, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, that's
okay.
There would not be, because you're not loaning on the property.
Right, but if for some reason I went out and I went to somebody and said I want to borrow $10,000 and partner with my IRA to do a deal, and it ended up being a 50-50 deal where I spent $10,000 on the note and then borrowed $10,000 to go ahead and pay for legal and trash out and everything else, then I may possibly be subject to taxation issues, correct?
Well, in that scenario, you're partnering yourself personally 50% and your IRA 50%, correct?
Actually, thank you
or
for saying
the
that.
IRA's just giving the loan.
Well, you're one question ahead of me, because I was going to get it from a guy who makes hard money loans. And he said, hey, I'll go ahead and loan the $10,000 to you, and you got to pay me back when the deal finishes up. So I'm not taking my personal $10,000, but that'll be the next question.
Okay, so that's correct. If the IRA does assume a loan, then there is UBIT that does occur, because they don't want you to have an unfair business advantage. But if you took it personally, then no. If you partnered personally, there would not be a UBIT.
Got it. Thank
only
you.
If the IRA is assuming a loan.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Appreciate it.
One more question, I think, before we hang up here with you, Crystal. Somebody asked about if you did a co-invest. In other words, if Kevin Moore puts up 50% of the money and Eddie puts up 50% of the money, is there any scenario where that percentage of profits could change on the backside?
It can only change if they're non-disqualified. So if you needed to sell a portion, that's completely fine. But if they're a disqualified person, then it has to be completely set. If they're non-disqualified, you can negotiate as you choose throughout the deal.
All right, so let me ask you a slightly different angle to that. So let's say that I put up $20,000 and Kevin Moore puts up $20,000, okay? And we buy a non-performing note and do the workout and all this kind of stuff. And every step of the way, every dollar I put up, he puts up, right? So we're equally invested all the way, and let's just say that we now have $50,000 in it, okay? We had 40, now we have 50 because of other expenses. We sell it for 100 grand and we make $50,000 profit. Is there any scenario that even though we're equally invested 50-50, that the percentage could change on the backside of how we split up the money?
I mean, it typically depends. If it's been 50-50 the whole time, you definitely would want to keep the profits specifically as they were with the percentages. But if there was anything that was covered separately and you need to reimburse, then sometimes that profit can change. So if he paid some expenses out of pocket because he's non-disqualified, you can always reimburse him at the end. So that's the only time that I've seen the profit be a different percentage.
Okay, cool. But we really don't want to pay any bills outside of our pocket, right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, very good. Crystal, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Crystal.
I forgot to ask Brian. I'm sorry, I didn't see this. I forgot to ask her about the number of loans. And so I'm not saying that we do this. I'm just saying I've heard other people that have numerous self-directed retirement accounts, so they don't have too many transactions in one retirement account. I mean, I've just heard more that people sometimes do that.
Rumor on the street?
Yeah. More, by the way, didn't you used to have an interest in an interest office?
Actually, I was going to buy the interest office, and the guy beat me to it, but that's okay. It ended up all right. Yeah.
So anyway, you actually one time were going to have a office that did self-direct retirement accounts.
Yep, I was going to have an Entrust office and then have my Homevestors franchise. I figured those would be two good things to have.
Yeah, cool. Okay, Mr. Matt, what's next?
To be honest with you, at this point, we do have about 30 minutes that we can spend towards any open call, non-performing content. If you do have something that you want to bring to the call, please raise your hand and type in what that subject matter is so that we can make sure that we're going to be putting what we need to put on the call. But other than that, we don't have anything else as far as content is concerned for today. So, yeah.
Okay. So let me open mic at first for a second, okay? So one of the things that we're really working at behind the scenes is that we really want to, we're working with a couple of new people that will be working with us on the liaison relationship, the liaison calls, and also working with the content. And there she is. And one of the things that's really important, in fact, Zarina and Kevin Moore, I mean, Kevin Shortell, Susan and I just had a lengthy conference call, is that we want to make sure that we're facilitating for students in all that is reasonably possible to get a question that they may have. Even if they're kind of like, Zarina, what if I said, hey, I'm shy? Okay, I don't want to say anything because there's 50, 60, 80 people on this call and they're going to make fun of me because I have a southern accent and I'm just...
We would never make fun of you to your face, though.
So in that scenario, Zarina might say, okay, well, Eddie, I'm going to present the case study on your behalf. And that I could just be silent, and we accomplish it. Now, Zarina, that doesn't mean that I'm off the hook, and all I got to do is go, there's something wrong, but I can't tell you what or why.
Right, right. You got to do your homework. It's just like, you know, if you were presenting for yourself, you say, okay, here's the documentation, here's where I'm having a problem, this is what I need, and there's going to be some pushback if you don't send in the right information, because what we can't do is guess what you're having a struggle with. You have to explain it to us, show us, you know, where you're struggling, and then we can really help you. So the same thing applies when one of the liaisons or me comes to present your case study. And this is especially good if you guys can't make the webinar as well. We have people send stuff in all the time and they watch the archive, so that still applies. You still have to send in the proper information.
And it's part of learning. Part of the learning is digging Absolutely. Through there and saying, hey, I'm reading this, and you know, that page 2, paragraph 6 says this, it says this part, dot, dot, dot. Well, okay, well then, you know, this is kind of what I'm kind of reading into it. And so I think we just want to make the case study scenario and the content scenario just higher and higher, and we keep talking about things to do that. one of the things that we talked about too, Zarina, with you is, you know, things that you commonly hear, you know, where you're on a liaison call and you say, well, this person had this question, you know, are there other people that would have this kind of a question?
Right.
And so we're going to try to address those as best we can. And our job, the best we know to do, is to teach you industry standards. Sometimes these are industry standards that might be different than how you would have thought. And every industry has, you know, this is how it has established practices. And so our job is to kind of teach you the established practices of the industry and what's, you know, a standard that we're held to within the industry. In other words, if we go out and buy loans, Zarina, I mean, what happens if one of these capital firms like Rocktop sends us a tape over with 400 assets and Bob Repass just goes, I'm not going to look at them. I'll just buy one. I just told them I'm going to buy them today.
Yeah. You run into a whole heap of trouble.
So guess what Rocktop don't want to play next month, do they?
Right.
So it's an industry standard. When you say you're going to buy, if there's something materially wrong, if there's something materially different, that's the case. And so we're going to have a lot of hopefully good exercises in due diligence and how we look at due diligence. Zarina, I also have some other big news, and I want you to ask you how we're going to handle this.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So, I have a long relationship with an attorney in California named Jillian Sidoti. Okay? And I've met with Jillian a couple of occasions. I had a conference call with her as late as today. And she's going to try to help us develop a plug-and-play JV agreement where you could, where I could take your money, me do the work, you're just a passive money investor, and that we could still do it in a legal format and be compliant with what SEC says we need to do.
Nice.
You like that?
Very cool. Yeah, because a lot of you guys, especially on non-performing, have a lot of people who want to invest in your business, and you might just be focused on non-performing now, and that's perfect. That's, you know, these people can invest with you. You can get the workouts done. You don't need to teach them and all this stuff, and you're still building your business. So,
all right, so here's what we need. This is going to be probably in the forum, okay? She needs scenarios. Left me with a homework assignment. Of course, I told her as soon as she gave me the homework assignment, well, I'm not really going to be the one that does it. But what we need, and I would say the forum is the proper venue for this, is I need every scenario, and I mean, some people just like writing encyclopedias, okay? My general life experience is you need to put it into some, you know, brief, bulleted type things if you're listing out things or whatever. Somebody just writes an encyclopedia, usually gets missed in the interpretation. Right, Zarina?
Right, yeah.
Tell them what happens if you write Eddie an encyclopedia.
You might not read all of it.
Might not.
It's a strong possibility if there's no bullet points, you ain't going to understand. It ain't happening.
All right, so this is a big deal. And we are she is willing to work on this in an expeditious way. We talked about having a deliverable probably inside of a month, but the job is on you guys to come up with, you know, how you would like to do it. And there's numerous people that have wanted to come up with this idea. Okay, so come up with some things, because once again, so that she didn't have to charge you $5,000 a piece, and this can be a very affordable format, like seriously a few hundred bucks. seriously, that's crazy cheap.
Yeah.
Then you need to come back to her with, I want to structure my deal with my investor, and I want it to be this way.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And also,
so you're basically giving them permission to do a little bit of what if. Just a little bit.
Yeah, because you're saying, if I did this, I would like to do it this way with an investor. You get to name what you'd like to do. It's your job to go find an investor to sit still for what you're coming up with. What if I said, Doreen, you send me $1 million, and I'll pay you back $1 a day for the rest of my life?
You ain't that young, Eddie.
I can make that crap up all day long, but if I couldn't get you to agree, there's no deal, right?
Yep,
so come up with something reasonable that somebody that you have a relationship with would agree to. But there's going to be different scenarios. It could be performing notes. It could be non-performing notes. It could be, there's a lot of different things that this could relate to. But this is really important. So I'm giving you guys a homework assignment. I had this conference call today before this call for that very purpose. Okay?
Nice.
Also, Zarina, what if I want to take your money, Matt's money, and Kevin Moore's money?
You're going to need somebody who knows what they're doing.
Now I'm going to need to probably do a limited partnership.
Yeah.
And so another facet of this, instead of a JV agreement, is a limited partnership. Now, I don't mean to scare the crap out of y'all, but I'm going to scare the crap out of y'all. Okay? An undocumented JV is not, probably not an advisable relationship. In other words, Zarina, if you just said, Eddie, I'm going to take your money and buy this note, and it's like, well, we're going to split the money 50-50, or you're going to get, you know, the first 10% interest on the deal every month, and we're going to split the profits 80-20 after that or whatever, and there's no documentation, Serena, you might have a different issue. Now, I know real estate investors and people in our space have been doing this for years and years and years. Usually there's not a problem until there ain't no money to split up.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So this sounds like a very viable way, Zarina, that for probably, I don't know, $500, $600, I don't know what, for like, I couldn't even start to go hire an attorney to go do this in some other way. But to make it scalable, we need some different kind of plug-and-play scenarios that people can select from.
Right.
That's what I'm looking for you guys. If you have one of the plug-and-play methods, which is going to be much cheaper for you down the road, because then you don't have to go hire the attorney to go handwrite your little story in there, we can build those up front if you guys will cooperate with us.
Well, that's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt, we're going to do open mic here.
Yes, first question is, this will be on the forum, is that correct? Do you know exactly where it's going to be on the forum?
Yeah, I'm going to post it in Raising Capital and Case Studies. That's the section it's going to be posted in.
Okay. Will that be under the non-performing side, or will it be just general?
No, that's under the marketplace. It's open to everybody.
Okay, down here.
Let's see, where are you looking at? Okay. Go down. Right down, down. You could do it.
That's
just
the market.
1, 2, 3.
Well, this is the marketplace, so that's
right. There you go. Oh, you were just on it.
Yeah.
Raising Capital. Little, case studies.
Yeah.
Got a little internet lag is all.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's where I'm going to post up the thread to start all this.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to get into the what if at this point. I know some people are asking some questions. I don't want to get into the what if. I'm just going to tell you right now that if you are taking, Zarina, I can make you a loan, and there's no security issue with that, right?
Right.
I'm just your lender. It can be a secured loan. It could be an unsecured loan. All that stuff. Me making you a loan is different than me giving you money under a JV.
Yes.
Okay? So this is where you're not lending, but you are taking an investor's money with some anticipation of getting your money back and making a profit. Now, I'm going to give you a little hint, Zarina. The attorney already tells me it's all about disclosure. Disclosure is everything.
Okay.
So one of the reasons it's important for people to put their desired scenario is documenting the disclosure appropriately. Have you ever seen the private placement memorandum that we have for Colonial Capital Fund 2, Zarina?
I've never seen it, no.
It basically says if you're crazy enough to give us money, we're crazy enough to accept it. I mean, if you're investing in private equity and somebody doesn't have that kind of disclosure in the private equity, you need to run for the hills. Because there's not a legitimate fund manager alive, legitimate fund manager, that basically doesn't say all the same, say the same thing. Okay? That's disclosure. It just says you are relying on our judgment and our management and our expertise to go do these activities. Buy notes, buy properties, make loans. You know, trade loans, all of those kind of, it defines, you know, it didn't say we can go buy furniture with it, right? We can't have a furniture store, but it's within the distressed asset world, okay? And it discloses that, but it also says, as long as we don't go steal the money, if we're just dumb, you can't get put in jail for being dumb in that scenario.
Right.
You can't steal. You can't run off with the money. You can't defraud. You can't embezzle. But it says right. that. That's an example. That's the type of thing that this JV agreement's going to say. Within this framework, here's how it works. Matt, did we get the code straight on this from last night?
I'm still working on that, Eddie. We'll get it fixed up.
Okay. So those of you that were at Summer Summit or weren't, there's a discount for all of the mentor students for RentFacts, it's rentfactspro.com/EddieSpeed. Eddie Speed is lowercase. And you're going to type in the promo code Eddie30, and it's going to give you a 30% discount off of the RentFacts. And that's part of the Turnkey Flipping Academy piece.
And don't they have an educational piece that they're going to be coming out explaining how to read the RentFacts?
We're giving all of the mentor students, we're giving all of the active qualified mentor students access to our training called the Turnkey Flipping Academy.
This is specifically tailored towards Fred's question because he has ordered a rent fracs and he's looking at it and he just wants to know how does he interpret it? So what would be the best way for him to be educated on how to interpret his rent facts?
Well, Kevin has done an interview with one of the founders of Rent Facts. That's going to be available here in a little bit. There is a scoring model that basically says whether it should work or not. So anything a 24 or above is you're not even gonna need a field inspection. If it's below 18, you're out. If it's 18 to 24, then for NPS to take over the property management, they're gonna require a neighborhood field inspection. Okay.
Cool.
That's wondering where the turnkey flipping academy is.
We're going to get it to you.
It hasn't launched officially yet.
There's all kind of fingers burning up the typewriters as we speak.
Right.
Here's my fine line. This is a performing note topic. I made this training available to all students. There are some very distinct advantages to performing notes, and 99% of any conversation about this is going to be covered on the mentor calls on Monday night or Thursday, period. We're not going to talk about it on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, okay? It is a performing note topic, okay? So I'm going to be like Forrest Gump today about all I got to say about this.
Oh gosh.
But if you're a big money platinum student, we're going to have the training available to you, and I'm giving it to you. It's just my gift. I gave it to the guys at Summer Summit, and I'm going to give it to anybody that's in the training program. We're probably about a week away from releasing it. Okay? Stephen wants to know what a typewriter is.
He's probably joking. I hope he's joking.
He's joking.
I told him it was an Amish keyboard.
Hey, man. I just missed the old Selectric, IBM Selectric 3 days. That's all I'm saying. You don't even know what that is, do you, Zarina?
My mother had one, thank you. I do know what that is.
You know that Martha used to type 3- and 4-page closing instructions every time we bought a note on a Selectric 3 typewriter?
Wow.
Now, that's prior to old Emily being around.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, let's see. We're going with open mic here for a second.
Wallace had a question. I'm not sure where we are on that. I don't know if you saw it. His question was, and I don't know if it went, couldn't we use a personal property trust and put investors in there? I've used land trust and lending trust when I do hard money.
No. No. If it's a loan, you got an issue. If somebody's putting money into a trust, they're co-investing with you. That's a JV. Doesn't matter. You can call it whatever you want to. Okay, without an agreement specifying what the agreement is, that's where I'm saying you potentially have a disclosure issue. I'm trying to close that gap. We could call it a Boy Scout Club meeting. Doesn't matter. Just saying.
Okay.
Zarina and I have discussed this issue on a lot of occasions. There are definitely some things that we would like to help some students clean up because we think that people just kind of do things and, you know, it usually works out. But, you know, we're trying to make it where you can feel, you can sleep very good at night knowing that this is handled. All right, Matt, we're going to do some open mic here. Is that what we're going to do? We're going to answer some questions.
I was looking at the boards, and Wallace had his hand raised, but that was the question he had. So, Wallace, if there was any follow-up to that, go ahead and let me know. Put your hand out. Charlie, actually, I think I just accidentally. Oh.
Charlie Wilson,
yeah, I think so.
Well, I can't see the attendees.
So oh, I'm sorry, Zarina. Charlie, are you there?
I am.
What's up, Charlie?
Hey, since we're talking about these JV agreements a little bit right now, I have a group of investors, 6 investors, that want me to buy a note for them and do the workout. They're going to put up the money. And I just was just advised by a local lawyer here that really I should just form a consulting agreement, let them form the JV, and I'm just a consultant.
You could.
And that way, and they want to put the money up, then split it. You know, I get 1/7 of whatever the profits are at the end, but we do that through a consulting agreement and let them do the JV between themselves.
Yeah. You ain't got any control.
Over the decision making?
At the end of the day, they're like, we're going to fire you as a consultant and do whatever the hell we want to.
Right. This is another question, I guess, as well, about what your opinion is. You know, if I buy the note from you guys, from Colonial, I'm a titanium student. Would there be anything, should I sell it to them for that, or should I sell it to them for the non-mentor price? Make a little money on the front end, and then...
You need to make a brokerage fee.
Right.
Yeah, you got to make money.
Right. Okay.
I mean, unless you're just that nice.
I would disclose that, obviously, but I'd be the one doing all the work, you know, as far as the workout for the most part.
The problem with a consulting fee, you know, I've done consulting for some of my family before.
Right.
And I have found that just because I give them beautiful consulting advice doesn't mean that they listen.
Right.
Just saying.
Right.
So, yes, they could buy the note, you make a fee, and you have a long-term consulting arrangement to do it, and your future income is tied to the fact that you hope they listen to you.
Right.
That's totally different than you're taking the money and disclosing that you have management role and you're doing that. That's a horse of a different color.
Meaning the JV agreement you were just talking about.
Or in the case of multiple investors, you'd need to either do an LLC or a limited partnership.
Limited partnership, even for a one-off note? I mean, just do one time?
Investors.
Yeah, okay.
Now you got six people that can sue your butt.
Right. It seems like the consulting part would be safer.
Yeah.
Just for a one-off, I'm going to be on a call with them tonight, you know, and work out a little bit more of the details of the JV. Originally, that's what they had asked for was for me to form a JV, you know, for everybody, and then go from there. But then local attorney here said,
"Let me tell you this.
Okay.
They're going to have to put the money in the account before you pull the trigger and commit to buy a loan.
That's my question, too, is like, how do I get the money quick enough?
Don't hit the button and say you want to buy unless you got the dough.
Absolutely. I've also thought about just buying the note myself and then just selling it to them. Because I've got, you know, six notes with you guys, you know. I've got two under contract right now with you guys. I might just sell them one of those.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely a cleaner transaction doing it that way.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Check the guy on the Twitch.
That's going to last forever.
I'm telling you.
Let me tell you something. I put a lot of thought into that story.
I missed it. That's all right.
You have to watch the video. It's a good one.
Oh, my God. It's a great story. But then I missed yours.
So we're even.
No, I'm going to watch yours on video. I've already heard Susan say it's in Dropbox.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch yours, too.
Okay. Not for the general public yet, so don't be blowing up our phones saying, Eddie says it's in Dropbox. Where's it at? Where?
There's a thing called editing. Not eddying. Editing. So, let Lord. Us do that, and then once I've got it up on the membership site, I will let you guys know.
All right.
All right, we are right at the end of our call, so I wanted to go ahead and let everybody know that the June offering for everyone has been put up. I did want to show everyone how to get to it, so that if you had any questions on how to pull it down, you are able to download it. So what you'll do is go to your Buy Assets tab, go to Download, your current offering, which will bring you to this tab. If you have a Mac, sometimes Macs, if you don't have the correct download that lets you open Excel, you'll have to just download all of the due diligence files from right here. That'll give you all the Dropbox files. The other is you go down to this tab right here. It says the June 2016 offering. Click on it, and you'll be able to download the Excel. This offering is a little bit different than the ones we've had in the past because we're showing everyone all of the assets that were purchased from Titanium. So all of the assets that are in yellow are the ones that have a pending or offer on them at this time. All of the ones that are clear or that do not have any coloring to them are the ones that are available, and those are the ones that you're able to place bids on. Not sure if that was clear, but I think we're good.
Yeah, we had some people that said, hey, man, I'd like to see, I'm thinking about being a Titanium, I'd like to see what they get, see, and we're like, okay, fine. Zarina, what else?
I see some double names on here.
Uh-oh.
I have to remind them again.
Uh-oh.
Guys, if you and a partner are, you know, Note School mentoring together, and one of them's not so technical, and you forward your webinar registration to them to hop on, it appears your name in the attendees list as a double name, and we got to crack down on that. So each one of the partners needs their own login for the webinars. So we're just kind of reminding you guys, don't forward any of your registrations for webinars to anybody else. Have your other partner register and log in themselves.
Okay, so that nobody gets mad, okay? So that nobody gets mad, next week, Matt, if we have people, if Eddie Speed shows up on the webinar twice, which means that I've, you know, got it on my laptop and my desktop or I forwarded to my, you know, buddy or whatever it is, we're going to zap it.
What are we going to do? Okay.
I don't want anybody mad about this. This is a security. Right. You guys paid a lot of money to participate in this private meeting. It is one person on the webinar. If you have a family member or a business partner, they should be listed. There shouldn't be an issue with that. And they should have their own invitation. Am I correct in that, Zarina?
That's correct.
So it should be one person per invitee.
That's right.
So we have there have been some security issues that we had to straighten up, and this has been one of the things that we've had to do to be able to monitor that. So I some of you have different stories. I had somebody say, hey man, I'm sorry, I logged in on my laptop last night, I logged in on my iPad.
Yep.
We didn't cut you off, but it needs to be one mode to get on there, okay? Is that it, Zarina? Yep. We got everything covered here?
Yeah, that's all I'm going to share for now.
Yeah, every member should have be registered, right, Zarina? I mean, when you, if I was a mentor student, Eddie Speed, and Martha Speed was my spouse, she was my secondary person in the mentor program. Eddie Speed gets a registration, and Martha Speed gets a registration.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So in that scenario, you guys both, if it's a man and wife or a man and a partner or whatever, there should be two different people that are getting the register.
Yeah, each person should register under their own name. And what it'll do, even if you share an email, like let's say you had an email, rllc.com, send the other registration to like your personal email, because what GoTo, it won't allow you to share the same email address. So just send it to your personal email that you used before, just so that you can make sure that you have separate registrations when you're logging on to the webinar.
Right. So we're working with some people behind the scenes to do some, there's a little bit of some security things that we need to do to make sure that the things that you paid for that you are uniquely receiving, right? This ain't some free webinar. This is a high paid deal to get to show up at this party. And so we're reverse engineering some things that we've been looking at registrations. And we're just cleaning this up because we're respecting the fact that you guys paid a lot of money to be with us, and we will make sure that you feel like it's as exclusive as we meant for it to be.
You pay to get these jokes, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like I don't want to go. I don't want to go to the department store and buy some nice suit, and some other old boy walk out the door and steal the same suit I just bought. That wouldn't be right. So, we're not suggesting anybody that's like double registered. We're not saying that you've done anything wrong. It's just saying in order for us to enforce the security that we now have discovered, you guys are going to have to reposition what your procedure is a little bit. We're not saying anybody's done has done anything wrong. Not saying that. All right. I'm going to NAREIA early in the morning, Zarina, National Association of Real Estate Investors. So one of the things that we have discovered is that we met a lot of you at RIA events, Real Estate Investor Associations around the country. And so Joe Varnador really runs our RIA relations. And if you are a member of a RIA and you would like for us to come see your group, then you need to be reaching out to Joe and let him know. So this is where all the RIA organizers will be there tomorrow. Are a lot of them that are at least a member of National RIA, which is pretty easy litmus test. If your RIA offers Home Depot discounts, this is going to be the right one. But anyway, nonetheless, if you're at a RIA and you'd like for Joe to come see you, then you guys reach out to joe@noteschool.com and remind him. And we get a lot of RIA engagements because of you guys, and we really appreciate that. So I'm going to be at National RIA and see the organizers tomorrow. I'm going to get to talk on Friday about the hot topic of alternative strategies, and I'm going to talk specifically about the Turnkey Flipping Academy at NAREIA and kind of how big that is in the market. And then also I'm going to sit on the panel with an attorney named Mr. Jeff Watson, and for National RIA's lobby effort, or lobbyist and legal issue expert, Charles Tassel, and we're going to talk about the Seller Finance Coalition and the bill that is being dropped right now, and we're in the process of passing out some communication to you guys about helping us facilitate that.
Nice.
Well, have a good day.
Thank you.